beauties to be dragged away by the heels, hauled into shallow pits by teams of thralls. And the muti wounded were to be dealt with.
Eagle, take four of our wisest men and place a circle patrol about the steading. I think the enemy will not return, but...
Aye, Carl.
Jorund shook his head and looked around, seeing the devastation of Markland. A tiny, wizened woman pushed her way through the crowd of watchers, stopping, eyes bird bright, in front of the Carl. Behind her, Ryan could see Christy and Mildred, both smoke-stained, but looking unharmed.
The badge that has come is from the Outlanders and the Black Woman, yet the good is from the Outlanders and the White Boy.
Well said, wise woman. Without the blasters of the Outlanders, the evil ones could have harried us toward destruction.
The woman shook her head at Sigurd Harefoot and waved a warning hand at the Norseman, a sapphire ring flashing on her wrinkled first finger.
More than the tools of Odin, Sigurd Harefoot. I tell you that it is the balance brought by the Outlanders. The wrong of the black and the right of the white. Cherish the one and remove the other, or the steading is doomed.
Ryan looked at her, holding her veiled eyes steady, until she broke and turned away.
If any of us is harmed, then you'll live to regret it. Y'all better remember that.
Ryan glanced at Jorund.
You are with us, One Eye, and we have agreed the women can live here with the others. The evil ones have attacked us before from up the coast. They have not come in the day behind the cloak of the fog before. But we turn them, and they have paid a heavy blood price.
As he finished speaking, Jorun stared at the wise woman, who spat on the ground in front of him and turned away. She threw her last words over her hunched shoulder.
The day will come when you will search your heart for a way to change what has happened, and Freya herself will not aid you. Nor will any man, Jorund Thoroldsson, Carl of Markland.
Bjarni Earthmover and two of the other warriors were ready to begin the journey to Valhalla, and the three wounded muti prisoners were to accompany them. One of the boats, fallen into some disrepair, was to be used for the funeral ceremony. Ryan and his companions passed the afternoon in their hut, resting, eating, and cleaning and reloading their weapons. Eric Stonebiter had come by and explained what was to happen, and to invite the companions, on behalf of the Carl, to join the ritual of death.
It will all take place as the fire sun touches our sister Earth, and the water and night close the eyes of the world.
Now dusk had come. Other than the men who stood watch around the perimeter of the vill, everyone was there, including the women and children, freeborn as well as thralls. Christy and Mildred, like the rest of the non-men, had their heads covered with shawls of dyed wool, a mark of respect for the passing of Bjarni and the others. Ryan guessed that the slaves and the women and children who'd been butchered would be buried somewhere quietly. This funeral was only for the warriors of Markland. Ryan led Doc, JB, and Jack out into the calm, gentle evening. The main fire of the steading had been built up and blazed so brightly that no one could stand within 20 feet of it. A number of smaller fires had been lit, some on the beach, some on a low headland where the trees grew close to the shingle. Jorund beckoned the four to stand near him.
This will not take long. We do not grieve much over one of our brothers fallen in battle.
It crossed Ryan's mind to ask whether being shot through the temple while carrying an apple on your head really counted as falling in battle, but he decided to keep silent.
What about the prisoners? You question them?
You mean, did we torture them, Outlander? Of course we did. But we spared them life.
But did you discover why they were attacking you? Did you find out if they planned to attack again?
The Baron looked puzzled.
Talk to the evil ones? How?
Of course. Muties like them. Well, I guess they won't likely talk anything close to what you speak.
No.
So, what happens to them?
There.
Jorund pointed toward the headland. At first, Ryan thought that three large men stood there, but the shapes were too big to be people, and he could make out something odd. The outlines were fuzzy, as if the men were built from branches and sheaves of grass.
What are they?
I believe they are called Wicker Men, my dear Ryan.
What, Doc?
The old one answers truly. I have heard them called that. Wicker men, straw men, basket men, all the same.
But I don't get it.
You will get it soon enough. Then you will quite possibly wish that you had not. It is damned barbaric.
The prisoners were to die before the funeral began, so that their souls could accompany Bjarni and the other Vikings on their last dark journey. They were led out, naked and bound tightly. As they stumbled past Ryan, he noticed that the thongs around their wrists and ankles were thick strips of rawhide that had been soaked. Ryan glanced at Doc.
Why do they wet the cords on them?
Fire doesn't burn water, my dear fellow.
The bodies of the muties showed clear evidence that they had been tortured, but not in the fiendish way that Ryan and the others had witnessed in the rancheria of the Apaches. This seemed to have been more in the nature of a prolonged and brutal beating. There was a woman and two men, one much older than the other. As with the rest of the attackers, the three were severely deformed. The woman had at least five pendulous breasts, and her nose was a ragged hole above a gaping, slobbering mouth. The younger man was unbelievably skinny, his ribs sticking through pale, bruised flesh. He was clearly a deaf mute, the sides of his shaved skull not showing a trace of ears. The oldest of the trio had only one eye, and his legs were unnaturally short for his body. As well as bearing the marks of fists, boots, and whips, each captive was wounded. The woman limped and could stand only because a warrior supported her on each side. The deep cut from a sword had severed a hamstring. The older man had a gunshot in his right shoulder, and the third mutie had two deep stab marks under his ribs. The people of the ville moved in behind the prisoners, walking in relative silence toward the low bluff. As they drew near it, Ryan caught the smell of lamp oil. And then he guessed what the wicker men were for, and why the ropes were sodden with water.
Fire blast.
The wise woman was there, carrying a small brass bowl with holes drilled into it in an ornate pattern. It held some scented herbs that were smoldering and giving off a light blue smoke. The setting sun flooded her malevolent little face as she capered around the tethered prisoners.
Freya, take thee, and may thy passing be slow and hard.
Night comes fast, Baron. We must dispatch them.
Aye.
Toraldson made a gesture with his right hand for the prisoners to be taken the last few yards to the three wicker men. Then both Jack and J.B. Dix realized what was going on.
Why not just slit throats?
Because this makes a more impressive show for everyone, Jack.
Once they caught the sickly taint of the oil that drenched the three enormous straw figures, the muties also realized their fate and began to struggle.
Shut the hell up, scum!
They were subdued with such speed and efficiency that Ryan wondered to himself how often this ritual had been performed in Markland. Each wicker man stood about 12 feet high and was only a crude representation of a human being. The stout legs and the main trunk were made from thick twigs and slender branches, which formed a tight cage for the prisoner. The bound muties were shoved into the wicker bodies, and more branches were hastily tied and woven into place to prevent their escape.
We have to watch this through, Ryan, or what?
Yeah, JB. I don't like it any more than you, but I guess we stay till it's done.
Ryan looked to the west.
Sun's down, so it won't be long.
Figure more of the muties will be back? These could have been a wreck outfit.
Depends on the size of their ville. They were a triple poor lot. Poorly armed. If we set our minds to it, I guess we could clear out the nest for these people.
The armorer nodded.
Want to?
Ryan glanced sideways at him, ignoring the old woman, who was now kneeling before the three wicker men and droning an incantation.
Guess not. You?
Not particularly.
Stay down, wait and watch. We'll try and get word with Christy and Mildred tomorrow.
Fucking triple hard. Kill him, yeah. But kill him fast.
Three iron-colored women had been assigned the task of lighting the wicker men. At the Carl's signal, they touched their smoking torches to the lowest branches. The oil caught quickly, and yellow flames licked eagerly at the dry grass that covered the framework. The oil was crudely processed and gave off vast quantities of choking smoke, which quickly handed a kind of mercy to the condemned muties. There was little wind, and the column of boiling darkness rose straight into the evening air, like an accusing finger. The wicker men were transfigured into giant men of fire. Most of the Vikings watched the hideous passing of their captives with a stoic silence, the flames staining their cheeks a bloody scarlet.
Suffocated. The best that one could hope for the poor wretches. Murderous they might have been, but that is a damnably wicked passing.
Jorund realized that the ritual of revenge was too quickly done, and he lifted his sword.
So they perish, and their soured spirits shall tread the path of tears for our brother Bjarni, and for the other warriors. Let us now go to them.
Ryan trailed along with the Norsemen, hoping to be able to get close to Kristi for a word, to sound her out about making a run from the archaic Vild within the next 48 hours. But the press of moving men stopped them. The long ship was pushed out into the still waters of the lake, Bjarni and his companions laid out on its deck. Ryan saw for the first time that the corpses of three of the young women, thralls, were also lying on the doomed vessel. Eric Stonebiter was next to Ryan, watching the ceremony.
The girls, how did they get chilled?
Strangled. Three women, freeborn, to accompany their masters on the road to Asgard.
Ryan didn't say anything. One of the first lessons he'd learned in life was that there was a time for speech and a time for silence. Knowing the difference was real important. The warriors chanted a paean of death to the lost men as the ship floated away, its sail furled on the high mast, the dragon's head on the bow nodding at the wavelets. Ryan couldn't catch many of the words, but it sounded like it was all about honor, valor, and brotherhood.